you were to visit my Facebook page, you'd see two quotes in my quote section. They're both from unlikely candidates. First one's from Darth Vader. He said, "I find your lack of faith disturbing." I've always liked that one. The other is from a fellow named Oscar Wilde. "The truth is never pure and rarely simple." Truth is never pure and rarely simple. It's been my experience. It's simply not that simple. Now, I'm fortunate that God has put men in my life that have helped me work through that. First and foremost, my father, who you all probably heard me say, and I mean with all my heart, that he is the greatest man who has lived since Jesus Christ himself, and is my first and foremost of all the unnecessary blessings I've received has been being his son. And actually, if I'm going to call him out from the pulpit, and the other guy that's responsible for me is sitting right there too, my old minister. So if blame him. That's an honor that he's here this morning. I like to just chat this morning. No bells, no whistles. Nothing broken. I'd like to tell you a story. Hypothetical story of a child. This child believes very fervently that there are monsters in the house. They live in the basement, under the bed, in the closet, in the attic. And this child is not simply, you know, allowing her imagination to run wild with her. She has evidence. Every night she sees movement at the corner of her eyes. She sees them moving. When she turns to look, they're not there because they're good at hiding, but she sees them. When you lie in bed at night, you can hear the creaking as they move in the attic. You can hear them groaning outside. And she knows when they pounce. Because right when she's falling asleep at night, that's when they always come out. Then she bolts awake. They scatter. Now, mom and dad don't know it, but she knows there are monsters in the house. But this child starts to grow up and starts to consider other evidence. You know, I've never met anyone who's been eaten by a monster. No one's ever discovered a monster. Mom and dad say that the noises are just the house creaking or the wind howling outside. And you know, if you get really quiet during the day, you can hear the same noises. Maybe she plucks up her courage a few times and actually gets out of bed at night. I mean, steps far away from the bed, you know, hops out of bed so that nothing can reach her. But then shines a flashlight underneath, goes and checks the closet. No monsters. Given enough of this, and the child starts to think, maybe there's something to what mom and dad and some of my friends are saying, that those monsters aren't real. I'm just convincing myself that they're there. And eventually, she becomes fully convinced, like most of us do, that there are no such things as monsters, especially in her house. This child went through three stages. The first one, she was a believer that there were monsters. And the last one, she's a believer that there are no monsters. But that wasn't an immediate transition. There is a period in the middle where she started to wonder if there were monsters, but she wasn't sure either way. And so she searched. She checked the facts. She longed for this new knowledge because, after all, if you find out there are new monsters, you sleep a whole lot better at night. She had that passion driving her. And that passion was what drove her transition. Well, these three stages are the same ones that Matthew talks about throughout his gospel. He, of course, uses different terms for them, and he's talking about the faith of a believer. The middle stage, that long stage, is the period where you are ye of little faith. And Matthew talks about ye of little faith a lot. That's the questioning phase. On either end, there are the people who are certain, and Matthew calls them the people of no faith, or the faithless. When the disciples were unable to cast out a demon in Matthew 17, they come to him, they ask, why couldn't we do it? And he calls them faithless. You had no faith. And then he actually kind of smacks him upside the head because he said, if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you could have done it. You could have moved a mountain. On the other end, there are those of great faith. Those whose faith makes Christ marvel. This only happens twice in the book of Matthew. They're the ones who are certain. Just as certain as the faithless were certain, these too are certain, but in a much more positive way. They're the ones who do not doubt. And then there's the group in the middle. In the book of Matthew, this group in the middle, ye of little faith, comprise every single follower of Christ. The two people at whom Christ marveled were not his followers. They were a Samaritan woman and a centurion. A centurion may be a story that's more familiar to you, where he asked Jesus for help, and Jesus says, okay, I'll come help you. And he says, no, I know how authority works. I know that if you say, let it be done, it'll be done. You don't even have to come with me. And Christ marvels. Now, you probably think the progression in Matthew is from no faith to little faith to great faith. But it's not. In fact, not to take anything away from them, the people at whom Christ marveled really had it easy. If a toddler can write their name, that's impressive, right? If I wrote my name and showed it to you, would you be impressed? Thanks for saying yes. These kids think a lot of me. He can write his name. Wow. The bar is raised. We expect adults to be able to do that. The people at whom Christ showed amazement at their faith were people that were not his followers. And as far as we know, they had no intention of becoming his followers. They simply believe that he could do what they hoped he could do. And that's good. But them having great faith was relative. So let's not beat up on the disciples and all of the followers of Christ for having little faith. In fact, I think being ye of little faith is a pretty good place to be. Allow me to illustrate that. I'm going to need your help to illustrate it. Don't speak out loud, but I want you to come up with something in your mind that God is calling you to, something that involves sacrifice, something that involves dedication, maybe some trepidation that you're not sure you can do it. Maybe he's calling you to go overseas in missions or even short-term missions. Maybe he's calling you to be a different kind of worker or a different kind of parent or whatever, something big that God is calling to you, something unique to you. Let's illustrate how Matthew would approach this. If you do not do it, if you feel God is calling you and you do not do it, then you are ye of no faith, as Matthew would put it, the faithless. This is what James is talking about when he says in the book of James that faith without works is dead. You may have the correct belief, but you don't have that faith to act. That is faithless, ye of no faith. If you are willing to do it, but you are quivering with fear at the very thought of it. The way many people respond to public speaking, where you're willing to do it, but it almost makes your stomach turn over. You get those butterflies. You worry about, how is this going to happen? How am I going to get the money to do it? How am I going to take care of my family and do this? How is it going to work? What if I'm just going to fail? So you do it, but you're terrified and you're overwhelmed with fears and doubts. Yes, ye of little faith. And if you step forward with a will, no fear, God's going to do it with me. He's going to take care of me. No questions. You have that certainty. That is what Matthew would call great faith. Well, let me ask you two questions, actually. First question, which of those categories accomplishes God's will? There are two of them. Ye of little faith, and ye of great faith. Ye of little faith may be terrified while you're doing it, but the bottom line is you are doing what God calls you to do. And God is working through you, just as surely as he's working through those of great faith. Moreover, who is showing courage? You may think the people of great faith, right? Because they know God's going to take care of them. No. It's harder to stare down a lion than a chipmunk. And the reason is that the lion is a little bit scarier. We have more fear of the lion. Fear and courage are not opposites. Courage cannot exist without fear. If you're not scared of something, it doesn't take any courage to do it. You know, I don't have any unique bravery when I chase a chipmunk with a broom. I'd have to have a lot of courage to stare down a lion. It is ye of little faith who show courage. I am scared. I am terrified. I don't know how this will work well, but I'm going to do it anyway. Being ye of little faith is not such a bad place to be. And Peter, in the story we read earlier, illustrates this for us very well. Peter got out of the boat, not because he thought it would be cool to walk on water. It wasn't a thrill ride for him. It wasn't for enjoyment. Text says he got out of the water because he trusted Christ. He said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come out to you." He knew that he was doing this through Christ and for Christ. It was Christ who was taking care of him. And he stepped out and he stood on the water, probably had an exhilarating feeling. No one before this has walked on water. And then he probably thought again, no one before this has ever walked on water. And he saw the wind and the rain, and he started to sink, and he cried out to Christ, "Save me!" Christ didn't hesitate. He grabbed his arm, pulled him back in the boat. The wind stopped, and the disciples worshiped Christ. There's a funny thing about when Christ is calling people, "Ye of little faith," they tend to worship him afterwards. They learn from their fear. My point is that Peter failed because of his doubts, because he was thinking of his own capabilities and not of Christ, but he was dead right in the reason why he got out of the boat. He got out of the boat because he trusted Christ. And things did not turn out the way he expected them, but he stepped out because he trusted Christ would save him from the waves. And you know what? Christ did save him from the waves. Sure, he got wetter than he would have liked. It didn't work out exactly as he planned. And when God calls us to things, when Christ is out on the water calling us and we step out, it probably won't turn out the way we expect. You ever had that experience? But Christ catches us. That's the illustration we learned from Peter. Peter is ye of little faith. And he doubted, and Christ did say, "You have a lot to learn. But you got out of the boat. I called you where it wasn't comfortable. I called you to not just walk on water, to walk on stormy water. And you did it." And Christ worked through that, and it's in God's word, and it's been touching millions of lives since. Let me tell you another story about another little child. It's an illustration I've used before of a child who believes that rain is caused by God crying. I believe that. I'm not ashamed to admit it. But like the other child who believes in monsters, eventually you start to question that, don't you? Wait, God must be really sad a lot. He must not like Christmas time because that's when he cries the most. And you learn about weather, and you learn about what causes rain. Long story short, the child eventually discovers that, wow, rain really isn't God crying. After a period of searching, he learns a little bit more about God. Okay, God really isn't just an old man in the clouds. God isn't a human at all. And again, if we're honest, that's the way most of us probably thought of God when we were little, right? Old man, or at least a super-powered human. And so not only does that child learn where rain comes from, but they learn something more about the nature of God. And that sounds so simplistic to us, but that's a dramatic move for a child. When is that child acting most like a Christian? We may be tempted to say it's at the end, when he understands God more fully. He knows the nature of God a little bit more. He's come to greater understanding. We may even be tempted to say at the beginning, when he has this innocent yet simplistic understanding of who God is. After all, faith of a child and all that. But I would contend it's in the middle, when this child is searching. When this child wants to know the truth about God. Even about something that as simple to us as does his crying cause the rain. This child is longing to discover something new about their God. And that is when we're closest. The truth is never pure and rarely simple. There's always something more to learn. There's always something more to which we are called. And I don't know about you, I'm terrified almost every time. I don't have the best planning skills. Those of y'all who are helping us move today will discover that firsthand. I approach everything with a sense of trepidation. Things don't always turn out the way I expect. I get wet a lot. I fall in the water. But so far, Christ has always been there with the hand to pull me out. I don't know what God is calling you to today. He's calling you out of the boat, and I don't know to what. I don't know how you're facing it, but I'm willing to bet that many of us are ye of little faith. I think Matthew was on to something when that was how he described every single follower of Christ, as ye of little faith. The people of little faith have to depend on God. There's no other way to accomplish things. Is he going to call you out of the boat? As James says, are we the ones who believe the right things like demons, but we won't act on it? Are you lucky enough, and thank God if you are, to be the ones who have no fear, no concern, just, God says, jump off that cliff, sure, I'll do it. Or, and I'm, you know, going on a limb here, are you the kind like me that faces the future, that faces the sacrifice that comes with following God with a sense of trepidation, of uncertainty, of not knowing what the future will hold? Faith is messy, isn't it? It's nice when it's black and white. I'd love for everything to be black and white, but it simply isn't. And Christ knew that. Christ fought with the Pharisees, not because the Pharisees were horrible people, but because they want everything to be black and white. This is what you do to be good. If you don't do it, you are bad. And when Jesus started hanging out with the bad people, they were upset. Like, whoa, 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 Jesus. We spend all of our time being good, not being like them. Why are you hanging out with them and not us? Faith is messy. Christ did not come for the well. He came for the sick. So allow me to encourage you. If you are one of those people with little faith, you are in a wonderful spot. And God will do things that are just as powerful and amazing through you as he will with the people who seem to have the greatest certainty, the greatest strength. Here's my last illustration. It's from Brother Martin Luther. You ever heard of him? One who started the Protestant Revolution? Yeah, Reformation, I should say, sorry. He was kind of whiny when he was a monk. And maybe a little overly literal. And he would confess his sins as any good Catholic would. This is before the Reformation. And he drove his abbots crazy. Because he just wouldn't leave them alone. If he remembered in the middle of the night one sin he had, he'd run to them and go and confess. And the abbots probably were thinking, oh, it's good you're confessing, but gosh. All right, here we go again. Here's Martin. It's your turn. That happened until one of his abbots told him something that changed his life. He said, I know that you worry about all the little sins you do and your lack of faith. Have you ever thought that faith is not your gift to God? Faith is his gift to you. Martin, and replace your name with Martin. Maria, Chuck, Ron. Whatever your name is, do you really think that God is calling you to something to which you do not have enough faith? Do you think he would call you to anything without having given you exactly the amount of faith you need beforehand? So I encourage you this morning. Wherever you go, whomever you go with, whatever God is pulling at your heart right now, get out of the boat. It's not that simple. Don't get out of the boat because you're going to walk on water. Get out of the boat, because whether you do or not, Christ is going to be right there to catch you. My faith is not in my religion. It's not in anything I've done. It's in the trust that there is a loving God out there who is taking care of me. And he is taking care of you. And there is no wave too high that he will not calm.